I love some. I like saying tapas with a bad accent. Tapas.
So. No. Get your own tapas. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Backpack Show at our normal morning hour. I had a question from someone last night when we did the Backpack Show after dark saying, oh no, are you changing the time? And I said, no, we just were doing a thing.
I got three different text messages from people saying, is it true you're live right now? I'm like, do you think YouTube lies? You know, YouTube's out there like, show up on YouTube. And I was actually very flattered that so many people had pushed notification on the Backpack Show.
That's sweet. And they were concerned about you. Somebody maybe hacked you and went live.
Someone hacked you.
They were going to bring you success insights instead of us. And who even knows how that would turn out?
That's right. Well, thank goodness we seek out success insights from unusual places.
We do.
Boy, today's going to be some unusual places. Have you seen Nathaniel? He is one of my swell artist friends, Nathaniel Lark. A million years ago, I fell in love with his work on Instagram. He had this whole thing going with a hashtag, I can see your beauty. And it would just draw these amazing pictures of people who really could use a little extra love. And he delivered a lot of love to a lot of people and made hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people swoon, sometimes even the fellas. And you went fishing and caught us a mermaid.
Stop it. Mermaids aren't fish. What is wrong with you?
I don't know.
That's offensive. We're going to talk with Una the Mermaid. She's a professional mermaid who travels the Pacific Northwest with her very own 900-gallon traveling tank.
Nice.
So I'm excited about that. We're going to talk with her about that and about the International Mermaid Museum and the annual Portlandia Mermaid Parade. Lots and lots to talk about with Una.
Hey, Project Rebuild. And we're going to greet each one of you.
Mr. Brogan, that's your dad.
You know what I'm going to start doing? I'll say that's my son. I'll make it backwards of most people.
You're so funny.
So persnickety.
See the resemblance.
Yeah, we both have a snowman beard. We'll say hi to everybody else in a minute.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
So excited.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Our very first mermaid.
Listen, this is Fight Club. If you haven't been here before, you have to say hello. If you have been here before, make sure you say hello. I see Elizabeth down in Texas. Oh, I got to remember not to touch the buttons. Sorry. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hey, you do what you want, but if you're going to show it for more than like a millisecond so people can read it.
I'm just flicking them. That's what I learned.
I know. I just try not to like induce seizures with the button switching. Just a tip for you from the Backpack Show.
Just
tip for success in running a live stream.
Wow, you're pro-y.
Oh, look at Naz. He's like, bah, moo, where's the mermaid? I think you'd better get Una.
I'm getting hooked off the stage here. I guess. Why don't we do this? Why don't we start with Una? Because, you know, people are going to go nuts if we do. Hi, Jeff Brown from Nashville. Hi, Leslie in Maine.
Of the Read to Lead podcast?
Read to Lead podcast. That happens to be my favorite podcast. Did you know that?
Besides this one?
I don't even consider this a podcast.
No, but it is now because we have courtesy of Castos.
Kira's here.
An audio podcast.
Hi.
I swear. If you do not stop touching buttons.
I'm so sorry I touched the buttons. I have my beads. I'll stop. Elizabeth says she raced with Siren and loves mermaids. Oh, she's a sailboat racer. So maybe
you might want to thank Castos Mike mega quick before we.
Oh, you want me to do an ad and a half? Okay, hang on a minute. Oh, I had this dream that I was doing ads last night. I really dreamt that I was doing ad reads. That's how you know how bad you are in life. We are so excited that the Backpack Show has its own little domain. It's thebackpackshow.online, but you can have your own .online. Go to cbrogan.me/online. You can get a domain for 99 cents. You could have mermaids.online for a buck, at least
if
for the first
available,
year. I don't know. Who knows?
I tried. I looked for yourmomis.online, but it was already taken.
Your mom is online.
That's what I wanted.
You want a podcast? We are hosted by Castos. Any place that you listen to a podcast, dump in the name The Backpack Show and subscribe, even if you're never going to listen to it, just to pump up my numbers so I can get even more ad money.
So you have a podcast.
Oh, yeah. It's castos.com. We do have an audio podcast for people who find us unattractive. You can go right there and take a look at it. We'll do the other ad reads later, but hint, one of them's about sausage.
Love me some sausage. It was that subliminal sausage.
Subliminal sausage.
Dora says that commercials are so fun in the show.
I also got told, I teased my daughters that mermaids and unicorns are tasty.
You bite your tongue right this minute. That is offensive.
Oh my gosh. Let's find out.
To Una.
Let's ask the question. I don't think that unicorns, I don't think that mermaids are good eating. What's your take on this, Una?
No, we're not very delicious. And, you know, mermaids are half human. So I feel like there's some borderline cannibalistic tendencies for like little questioning people that think that's a interesting delicacy. But, you know,
so don't start at the head, like the chocolate Easter bunnies. You got to start at the bottom.
Right. I guess so.
Oh, wow. Well, can we get some definitions up first? I mean, there are people I think who maybe like to sometimes wear a tail who probably don't qualify the same way that you're doing, or maybe they do. Maybe they just kind of get a pass on what they are. Can you talk a little bit about the space around you for this?
Sure. You mean the physical space I'm in
now? Well, no. Well, yes, but what does it mean to be a mermaid? What is the culture? Like, if someone wants to join your community, and they honestly do, like, what do they need to know?
Like, do you consider it cosplay or more than that?
Oh, great. Yeah. So first, some clarity. So cosplay is typically when it's not just dressing up in costume. Cosplay is usually when you are mirroring or replicating a particular character in existence. And there, so a mermaid cosplayer might be something like an Ariel cosplayer, because she's dressing up as Ariel, right? Or another character from another film or comic or any kind of print media. So I'm not a cosplayer, although I do dabble in cosplay for Rose City Comic Con and other events like that. But mermaiding is a worldwide subculture. So it's international. So it's not just here in Portland, Oregon. It's nationally and internationally. There's even mermaid schools and training academies. And mermaiding is, it can be anything from sort of a casual hobby to what we call professional mermaiding. And professional mermaiding is typically folks who are actually mermaiding professionally, either as a living or they're getting right paid for the work that they do. And so a really good example of just sort of when people think of professional mermaiding, you think the Wikiwatchee mermaids over there in Florida, right? So we're talking about underwater performers, underwater models, underwater artists. And so there's a variety of different ways people can engage. I'm an independent mer, so I don't work for anyone except for myself. And so I travel around and I work with community events, private parties. I actually donate a lot of my time as well because I do charity work. So it really is all over the spectrum. But honestly, anyone can be a mer, and we have mermen as well. We have non-binary mers, trans mers. We have young mers, older mers, and it really doesn't matter. The enthusiasts are all over the spectrum.
Chris, you could do this. It's not too late.
I got to break in. I'm on your site, and there are pirate parties as well, with live black powder demonstrations and pirate ship sailing lessons.
Oh yeah!
I'm so excited. My pal
it's
Angel.
It's a verb.
My pal Angel is friends with a whole bunch of pirates, modern day pirates with cannons and cannonballs and all that stuff. And similar to the Mer experience, they very much consider themselves pirates.
Yes, my husband is a pirate. So, sort of mermaid pirate, traditional kind of mash made and the sea, I guess you could say. But he's part of a reenactment crew here in Portland, and they engage in live black powder demonstrations from blunderbuss to full-size cannons. And so they put on a good little show as well. And they've been
doing that. So you like a bad boy. You're not like a mermaid that waits for a prince and wants like a refined life.
No, I think, yeah. I think the crew he's part of is called Outrageous Fortune, but they're a pirate ship that sunk. And so they're kind of the pirates who don't do anything. And so the mermaids just sort of help them, I think, make life a little bit more interesting.
Oh, cool.
Chris, I can see you as a pirate. That's fine. Thanks,
well, I don't want to show comments and hide.
Well, hang on. Let me just show a couple pictures, because this is like quite a decorated space. When someone comes to like fix your dishwasher or something, they must really have a lot of questions. That's what I got to imagine. Look at all this. So much work in this. Oh, look, a smaller mer.
Oh, yes, that's my Merling, although that Merling is now 16 years old.
Oh, so my golly.
These are a little bit, some of these are my, just sort of my online journal, if you will, of my mermaiding adventures. But I'm also an oracle. So I'm mermaid, but I also work spiritually with the archetype of the mermaid, and I use it in healing work as well. I actually work with a lot of folks with trauma, and we talk about the archetype of mermaid and water and emotions and how that can be used as healing as well.
Which kind of answers...
my hair is here for it.
Jinx is complaining that this is just cosplay for adults, but we already just went through the cosplay thing, so you don't have to re-explain it if you want. It's not. But two, you just said, I mean, you're doing a lot of spiritual healing with it. I mean, if someone's kind of having a rough time of it, I mean, you have tools that you bring to this. You want to talk just a tiny bit more about that?
Sure, absolutely. So although I'm a professional mermaid, I think there is sometimes misconceptions about the type of people that do this work. Many mers, particularly in my circle, we all have we do it part-time. I'm not a full-time mermaid yet. But I work in the healing field. I'm an actual professional educator and trainer. I work in prisons. Actually, I'm a prison educator, and I've been working for over 10 years doing that work in restorative justice as well. And part of what I do is I use my background in psychology. I'm currently finishing my doctorate in psychology, and I use a lot of the frameworks around trauma healing, and I integrate that into what I call transpersonal play. So using creativity and imagination as a way to help bring joy and healing, particularly people, both children and adults, who have found sort of that missing piece in their childhood. Oftentimes, you know, people that have trauma have some of their joy taken from them. And so this is to help people reconnect with a part of themselves that is often lost because of family violence or other sort of events in their life that just make it difficult to sort of tap into this creative, imaginatory piece of themselves. And so there is a serious side to what I do as well.
Right.
And the other part of it as well, I want to make mermaiding accessible, right? Mermaids are an archetype that tend to be over-sexualized. We tend to get a very specific idea of what a mermaid should or should not look like. And so for me, this is also about body positivity and letting folks know that you can be and feel beautiful regardless of what your body size is, your age, any of those things. And that oftentimes when children in particular are engaging with you when you're performing or doing community work, children don't see the things that adults see and judge, right? What they see is magic. They see a crown, they see a tail, they see your glitter and your sparkles, and it creates a bridge to communicate and interact with the community on a whole new level.
I'm way back on transpersonal. One thing I was thinking about when we started talking about it is it makes me think a bit of furry culture. Furry culture is a very similar thing. People who want to identify at least part of their life or all of their life as a dragon or one of those other types. Do you see this as kind of a cousin to that, or is this absolutely not the same, or how do you relate that in your like PhD studies and whatnot?
Yeah, I don't actually know a whole lot about furry culture, but I can tell you a little bit about what I call transhumanism. And for a lot of mers, now there are some merfolk that perform and mermaiding is just a job, and they engage, you know, just like you would with any other job, and they kind of leave it home when they're done. But there are those of us that we actually identify sort of deeper, more spiritually, and our identity is connected more with the archetype of the mer and the ocean, and we sort of identify ourselves as transhumanists. And I know that that is a tagline, and if there were a better term for it, I would use it. But what that means is, deep down spiritually, some of us don't even really identify as human. We feel like spiritually we actually come from somewhere else, and the mermaiding is sort of the closest way we can feel connected to the identity, if that makes sense. It's almost like tails kind of serve as sort of a prosthetic and getting us closer to reconcile sort of this disconnected feeling between how we feel we are as species-wise versus how we are physically. I don't know if that makes sense. That might sound a little obscure for people that are not familiar, but there's a whole world out there of people who do not actually identify as human. So dragons, there's fae culture, which are the fairies, and there are people that identify as fae. It's all over the spectrum. And when I first started engaging, and I'm originally from Hawaii, I always joke with people, I was literally born in the ocean there. And I did not know that other people identified similar to me until I started doing this work. And then even the parade that I do, was sort of my siren's call out to the community to find people like myself. And I did. I found them and I found my pod. And so that's sort of magical. And I also think it's great to provide a space where people who do identify differently can come and feel comfortable and be themselves.
You have a PhD.
Yeah, I'm finishing it. I'm about a year away, and this has been an 8-year journey. So working full time, being a parent, working really 3-4 jobs, ultimately, plus going to school, is a lot. So it's been a long journey, but in about a year.
Part-time mermaiding.
Part-time mermaiding. Yes, that's slowly becoming more. not as much part-time. It's taking off, so that's good.
When you mentioned going into prisons, I of course thought, oh my gosh, what do the prisoners think? Like, I mean, there's got to be such a mix, but I mean, let's kind of address the herring in the room. Some people make fun of you about it. Some people trash you for it. There's a lot of people who can't let you have your good time or can't even vaguely understand what goes beyond the tail, so to speak.
Right.
How do you talk to that? How do you address that?
Sure. Well, I've been very fortunate. If there are people that have been negative out there, I haven't encountered them directly. Maybe they're doing commenting on the side. I haven't had too many negative experiences. Now, not everyone understands what I do. And when they say, well, what do you do? And I say, oh, well, I'm a mermaid. And they're like, they look at me kind of funny and they're like, cool. And they're like, but what does that mean exactly? You know, and it takes some time to kind of explain it. When I started doing I've been doing work in the prisons for over 10 years. I had a bit of a dilemma of sort of living a dichotomous life, you know, do I let people know in this world what I do socially? And I didn't for the longest time. I didn't share any of that with folks. I was very concerned that maybe I wouldn't be taken seriously in my academic work. I was afraid what people might think. But the reality was the work that I was doing on the mermaiding was becoming popular. I was getting into social media. I was getting interviewed by the media. And here's the reality. Folks inside prisons watch a lot of TV. And I was outed because I was on a local news channel, you know, in my shell top and my tail getting interviewed over the summer one year. And I come back into the prison like the following week and the men that I had been working with had all seen me. And they knew it was me, right? And so it was like, okay, it's time to have a conversation, you know? So I shared with them what I do and why I do it. And people love it. I mean, they're like, wow, that's really amazing. I want to get my kids involved, or how can we get involved? Or, you know, how do people do this? And then when I tell them about the tank, or I tell them about how I actually perform underwater and the things that we do, people are very fascinated by it. And then I also work with women who are incarcerated as well. And I share with them my story. I've taught parenting classes on the inside, and I share with them about my own trauma history and about how mermaiding actually played a very significant role in healing my own trauma and then being able to connect with my own child. And, you know, a lot of these women come from similar stories. And so when I share with them that you can do these creative things with your children as well and build these bridges of connection, it's a lot of support. Although I will say my one funny story I'll share with you real quick is working at the prison. You know, there's a lot of gossiping. It's like a high school, right? Like prisons are full of rumors and gossip and whatnot. And, you know, I was the class where everyone was like, that's the mermaid teacher, right? This got around really quickly.
So your class filled up first.
Right. And the stories get taller and taller down the line, of course, what that really looks like and what that means. But somehow it got out to the facility to correctional officers that I was telling them that I was a real mermaid. Like I believed I was a literal mermaid. Like this is what came out. And an officer went and reported it to like some high ups in the prison to complain and saying that, you know, there's this crazy teacher that's telling all the adults in custody that they're a real mermaid. And the funniest story about it is all of my colleagues, my bosses, they all know I'm a mer, and they know all about what I do. And I share with them, and they even attend some of the events. They call up my boss and they're like, hey, this lady, that's your teacher. She's a mermaid. And my boss goes, oh yeah. And? And they were just fully supportive. And they're like, well, aren't you disturbed by that? Or does not bother you? And they're like, absolutely not. You know, and they're like, well, she says she's a real mermaid. And then my boss goes, well, but she is. So she swims in a tail. So for her, it was real. And so, you know, that was my one negative experience. But other than that, I mean, once I get an opportunity to share about what I do and why, people seem to be pretty open to it.
What's your PhD in?
Psychology. Yeah, my background is in transformational psychology. Yeah, and I have a background in neuroscience as well.
There was another question that passed through about whether, you know, how you breathe underwater, like how that actually works when you're performing.
Oh, great. Yeah. So I actually also have, I'm disabled. I have chronic disability. And so what's also great about mermaiding is that there's a variety of different ways you can mer, depending on your physical needs. So I'll give you an example of the spectrum. So we've got professional, I'm going to say free divers. I'm not a free diver. So I'm not the kind of mermaid that goes 200 feet under the ocean with no scuba tanks, right? Like there are mers that can do that. They can do extensively long breath holds up to 5 to 10 minutes underwater. And so typically a lot of mers and even myself, we do breath holds. So I don't have an oxygen tank. My tank is not that big. I can actually stand up in it if I have to. So I don't need oxygen. But, you know, in certain what I call large tank and deep tank performances, there will often be emergency oxygen available. Wikiwachi mermaids, if you ever watch them, they have airline tubes that run down to the bottom where they kind of hang out at the bottom of the tank and they swim over and they'll take a couple of breaths really quickly and then they perform. So it's really kind of depending on your skill level and your ability and also what kind of venue you're performing in.
I have to show people just for a second. This is so nuts to me. Functional mermaid tails. These are $350, but why functional is that these are perfect for the water and they actually enhance your ability to swim. Because I was thinking about the fact that even like people with prosthetics, you know, people who lose their legs or whatever, if they're runners, they get that opportunity for those cool ass carbon runner springs. I've got to imagine there's some really cool mer hardware for someone who wants to really put out some swimming power.
Oh, yes. Tails are a huge part of our subculture and they range. You know, you can get a swimmable tail as cheap as maybe $60 to $100. I would say that would be like your baseline, but they can range all the way up to 10 grand or more. I think the most expensive tail I have probably would run around the $2,000, $3,000 range. So I have fabric tails all the way to full silicone. And the full silicone tails are really more like the prosthetics. They become like a second skin. And it is quite a process to even get on, let alone get it off. So, and there's a lot of physical sort of exertion and other sort of physical components to the work that we do that a lot of people don't realize. It's not all looking pretty and singing songs. Like, I don't sing songs. I'm not a singing mermaid. If you hear me sing, you'll throw yourself in the river and kill yourself and drown. And that's really, you know, that's the myth, really. People don't understand.
Not all people can sing well either. I mean, that makes sense. Like humans can.
We're not luring people to their death. It's just that we sing so awfully that when you hear it, you just don't want to hear it anymore.
So. Anything is better than this.
Right.
We'll do a couple more questions and we're going to put you backstage for a minute and ask some questions of you later as well. By the way, Karen Putz is here. She's a barefoot water skier and learned that later in life. And so she shows people that they can have ageless passions. So no doubt she is here for it. Wikiwachi, we talked about that before you arrived. And then Carol asked the question, which to me is almost like backwards. I would think it's lower body strength. Do you have to develop more upper body strength to be a good mermaid?
Yeah. So it really is your core. So when you're swimming as a mer, right, it's not really natural for your legs to be bound when swimming. And so it does take a little bit of getting used to. I mean, I swam like a dolphin since I was a little kid. I mean, I grew up literally in the ocean. So it came sort of natural for me, but some people do have to practice more to kind of get used to it. But when you swim as a mer, your body, you know, your upper core is doing actually all the movement. Your legs are sort of trailing behind. And the monofin, which is the prosthetic piece in the fluke of the tail, is propelling you forward. But it really is your core strength. And after even a few months of doing mermaiding, you will have excellent abs. I can guarantee it. So.
Wow. Now I want a mermaid.
I'm here for it.
Elizabeth says, are there dive masters on hand for safety? And what's the best way to stay in shape for a mermaid? I think it's swimming.
Great. Yeah. So the thing is that in public pools, like when mermaiding sort of became the sort of, oh, you know, everyone can get a tail, because it used to be kind of a niche. Like people didn't know you could mermaid. They didn't, tails weren't really accessible. It hadn't hit the public yet. And then when it started becoming more public, particularly with a company known as FinFund, they started mass producing tails. It became more accessible. People started bringing these tails everywhere. And so what we find is that a lot of public pools actually ban. You're not allowed to swim there as a mermaid, unfortunately. And mermaiding is not dangerous, but at the same time, like, you would never leave your child unattended in any pool with or without a monofin. And so some of the issues that have occurred, you know, or when parents have left children unattended or children who can't swim, like, you're not going to take a non-competent swimmer and put them in a monofin, right? That's not smart. So it's really sort of being educated about your typical swim safety. As far as sort of safety teams being on board, yes. And in situations where mermaids are doing large tank performances, you know, I'm talking like Wikiwachi, but also Vegas, right? Or any of these sort of really large tank performances, or when they're swimming with wildlife, for example, they're always going to be teams above that have safety, you know, in mind, rescuers, things like that. Even when I do, even though my tank is smaller, my husband, who is also my partner, there's always at least one person watching sort of my spotter while I'm in the tank, because if there's an emergency, I need to be able to have somebody be able to help me. So it really just depends. But I know that most MERS do like to have at least one other person with them for sure.
It's amazing stuff. Everyone's here for this. They're asking so many questions.
Yeah.
Una, we're going to bring backstage. Stick around if you can. We have some more things we'll ask you.
Please don't go anywhere. We didn't even talk about the parade. We'll have to get to that at some point.
And by the way, someone needs to tell them they need to re-subscribe to their URL. All right. I got to hit two buttons really quick before we grab Nathaniel Lark. Don't you ever go away. This is going to be excellent. But when Una writes her book, because she's almost done her dissertation, she might as well write a book. Go to PubSite, pub-site.com. You can make a website for authors. This is a site for authors. Don't be weird. 2 hours. No more than 2 hours. You can actually do it in 40 minutes. I'd race you if you want. So pub-site.com. If you want to make a show like this, you could go to cbrogan.me/StreamYard and set up StreamYard. You can have an incredibly fun show just like this one.
Go get your own mermaid.
Get your own mermaid. Listen, we only have a few more. Carrie's closet full of sausage is reaching the bottom. If you want the last few packets of sausage laying on the floor.
Down to the weird flavors.
Next to her National Geographic and sort of next to Skittles sausage. You got to send an email in right now, carrie@chrisbrogan.com, and we will put you on the next Johnsonville Appreciation Day. We just got a great video from Deanna Shaw that makes me so happy. Sausage. Johnsonville. Sausage.
There's so many questions. We're going to have to ask about the pool.
Yeah.
We're going to have to ask
waterproof about makeup. We're going to have to ask about everything. Well, not quite as fun. I don't know what you're saying.
Rob, don't knock it till you've tried it.
All right. This man, I can't. Well, I'll just bring him out. This is Nathaniel. Hey, Nathaniel.
Hey, Chris. Hi, Kay.
Hello.
Good to see you both.
You get to follow a mermaid. I know it's rough.
That's a tough one. I'm gonna do my best here.
When I met you a million billion years ago on Instagram, you were drawing these beautiful pictures of women most often, and women that maybe had somehow accidentally skipped somebody's attention and they needed a little bit more attention, and you would find them and sort of shine your light on them and, you know, sort of really highlight what makes, you know, them show up. And you've since switched to doing sort of a very cartoon based, you know, almost Bill Watterson style, but let's go way back to the beginning.
Okay.
What happened? What made you say, and I know you're a very shy guy, what made you dare? What made you dare to start putting this up on the screen?
Well, I'm just going to address that mic issue real quick.
Does
that sound okay?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Well, when I first got started, Instagram was a space at the time. I didn't even realize that it had a social media component. When I first heard about Instagram all those years ago, it was, to the best of my knowledge, an app that you use to put filters on your photos.
So you could look better than you normally better. Look.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's all I really knew about it. And it was just sort of by happenstance and experimentation that I realized, oh, there's some people here too. And so I figured it was kind of like a low risk way for me to just draw some things that were fun and interesting to me and share them with people in a space that I figure, like, well, the people that are here will see it and cool. It's almost kind of like in the background, and I can just share this and just try some things out. I didn't realize what it would become, and I didn't realize, I guess the effect or the reach that those things would have. And so what was nice about that is it gave me the opportunity to just kind of like get into a warm bath of doing things that I enjoyed that I didn't feel self-conscious about, and you know, just sort of let myself out. Because as you mentioned, Chris, I'm a shy person. Just being here doing this right now is a huge win for me. And so, my initial experimentation with my art and sharing those things that were meaningful to me was really exactly that. It was experimentation and just going like, hey, I care about this. I want to try this out. I'm just going to kind of put it out there. And I was quite surprised to discover that a lot of people really, really connected with it.
And like any particular post years, these are the old days. We're going to get to the new days, but this here right here, yeah. You know, remember that you're beautiful. It says, I know exactly how you feel. Even on days when I'm feeling pretty fantastic about myself, there are triggers that'll make me feel worthless. For example, one night years ago, when I was a storyboard artist for television, I was leaving the production office feeling like the king of the world. I'd moved from Wisconsin to Los Angeles with the highly unlikely dream of being a professional artist, and I had made it. I was the man. Just then a beautiful young woman stepped out of her car in the parking lot and it was over. I was instantly back to feeling unworthy and I couldn't even imagine a world in which she would ever talk to a loser like me. That still happens when I see a woman I'm attracted to. It probably doesn't help that I've made choices in my life that reinforce that trigger.
Must be cool to listen to somebody else read your very personal, intimate story.
what was weird actually was just now, Chris, you delivered that with such authenticity. I thought you were breaking from reading to actually say that happened.
Oh, does it also happen to me?
Yeah.
No, I think I'm gorgeous. So I have a delusion. It's a whole other problem. But so you've got like, you put your belly right out there on this thing all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just... For a guy who's super shy, that would seem sort of counterintuitive. Can you talk just a little bit about what that's like?
Whew. Yeah, it is. It is counterintuitive.
Sorry,
it's also, how do I best describe it? It's almost like journaling. If you can treat the creation of the art and the subsequent sharing of it as something that, at least I do, I think of it as very deeply personal. And when I write and draw, I think of one person that I'm writing or drawing to. And that's just kind of been a thing that I have always done. Either that one person might be myself or someone online who supports me, or it might be someone in my personal life that's close to me, but I always try to think of one person I'm writing and drawing to and keep it in that space until it's public. And then when it's public, it's no longer completely mine and I don't have control over people's reaction to it or whether or not it landed for this person or that. But keeping myself sort of in that bubble of I am only drawing this and writing this to satisfy this one person, that's all I have to really think about. And it allows me to kind of open up as a normally like naturally shy person, to open up and put it out there in a way that's unfiltered and raw and honest and a little scary. But then once it's out there, it's out there. And then comes the kind of the fun part of actually realizing other people feel the way that I do and connecting with those people too.
Dora loves your voice.
Oh, thank you, Dora.
See, you should read your own Instagram captions if anybody's going to read them.
So this one talks about your vote. It says, I drew, I wrote, I called my brother, I helped, I apologized, I forgave, I listened, I loved, I voted. You don't often dip into political, but the world has been such a place lately that you kind of had to.
Yeah. It's interesting because I didn't think of that so much as a political statement, because it's really, obviously it's not about which direction I decided to vote, but it is certainly about the fact that I voted that day was the last thing that I did, that my life is my vote. And so I sort of looked at that as, let me make a list of things that I did actively in my life today. And those were all actually like bullet pointed things that I did that day that I felt had an impact on my world to whatever degree I can have an impact on my world. And then I voted, you know, and I feel like my life is my vote. It's how I behave with people. It's how I behave with myself, and that my strongest vote is the way that I live every day. Because once I cast a ballot in the polls and I go home, a lot of that stuff is no longer up to me. I did what I could, but man, there's a huge political process that I just don't have a hand in, but I do have a hand in my life.
Wow. So a lot of people love your voice. Even men in the audience, like husbands that are watching. Love hey, fellas. Hey, fellas. You feel really bad about yourself. Carol says, I've seen you draw on both paper and on tablet. What's your standard process? Mm. Like, what's your usual go-to?
Ah, my standard process. Oh, sorry. I had a little glitch there and I talked over you there, Carrie.
Oh, please. Anytime. So I just host the show. I want to listen to you.
No, I appreciate it. Okay. So my standard process is right now, my standard process is to draw digitally on the iPad. It's very convenient. It travels with me everywhere and makes it smooth and easy and super versatile. I am a huge fan of traditional drawing and painting media. I mean, I learned that way. I love using that stuff. I love the smell of art supplies. I could sit in an art store and not buy anything for hours. They'd probably have to drag me out just looking at stuff and noodling around with all the toys and trinkets. So that's my little joy spot. But drawing digitally is a very convenient way, not only to produce consistently and then have very quick, easy uploads without worrying about time for scanning and all of that kind of stuff. But also, you know, you've got one device that can do so many things. And if you have to be on the go, you kind of can't beat it.
Coach Woodard says, it's interesting you draw for one particular person and then release that work to the universe. Do you ever have any conflict over that release?
Oh, gosh.
Every time, maybe, Nathaniel?
Yeah, definitely. And I'm not sure if he meant their conflict from people who receive it or internal conflict, but I'll just kind of address both. Internally, once it's out, sometimes, yeah, you have that regret of maybe I shared too much or didn't share enough or I didn't say it the way I meant to say it. All of that stuff can always happen once a work is created and out available to people. And then on the flip side too, when something doesn't land for someone or there's something that I missed as I'm in my own little bubble, that was offensive to someone, that's happened too. And I think it's important when you're creating and you're sharing and you're making a deliberate decision to share that, yes, you're an artist and you have to be true to yourself, but I'll speak for myself. I take it as a personal responsibility also that once I have shared and I've made that choice to do so, that if it lands in a way that is hurtful to somebody, that I pay attention to that and ask myself if that's something that I meant to do. Do I stand behind the way I did that, given the way that person feels? That's a checkpoint for me. And if I don't, I apologize. And sometimes I'll make edits or take something down. But I think that's fair to do. Sometimes we don't see our own blind spots until someone points them out to us. But then there are other times when you do have to stand behind your work because you do believe in it. And that's fair too.
That's where the philosopher comes in.
Yeah, true enough.
Carol has a question. She said you'd wanted to build up a buffer of strips so that you didn't really have to feel the pressure to produce every single day. Did you manage that?
Yeah, I did. Great. Thank you for asking that. The buffer is not as large as I had hoped. I think what she was referring to there is doing an almost daily comic strip now. And for a while I was drawing them and posting them just as fast as I could. I would get it done and post it the same day. And then the next morning it was like, whew, I mean, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, just bang, 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 working. And so I took some time off. I took 5 weeks off. I worked on developing the characters a little more, their visual style to get some consistency there. And also to build up a cushion of strips so that I'm not just under the gun constantly. So I have some lead time now, which is nice and helpful.
So my question, this is a tough question for me to ask you. This is tricky. So I fell in love with that way that you related to people who felt underseen and underrepresented.
Yeah.
But now who Nathaniel is a strip writer. And he has a sort of Bill Watterson kind of a look, which I hope you take as a big compliment.
Because I do, yeah.
It's definitely got that sort of Calvin and Hobbes flow going. And, you know, it's... to your point about developing out the characters, you know, you're working on making Benny, you know, really have a voice that, you know, makes there a reason, and your expressions are selling it without, we can wipe out the bubble and know that this is, you're explaining something and,
hey,
you know, look at all this, we get it all going. And that face there, like the your reaction to Benny saying, I'm going to be famous. There's a lot of meat in there. And so clearly you're saying, I really want to see what I could do with this. What was the decision to change? And were you worried you'd lose a massive amount of your old fans who just wanted to see you say nice things to less appreciated women?
Wow. Thank you, Chris, for asking this question. I appreciate it. If you feel like that was a hard question to ask, I'm glad you did it. I think it's an important one. There's a huge transition between the work that I was consistently doing before and the work that I'm doing now, as you pointed out. And so I was worried. I was worried that the people that supported what I did and helped build the community around what I was doing was going to look at what I'm doing now and go like, "What? This is not at all what we were here for." And if they felt that way, they were right. What I do now is very different. But at the same time, what I'm doing now is just as that work was then, completely true to who I am. At this point in my life, it's completely true to who I am. And also, it wasn't a deliberate decision to let me just change gears. This happened quite by accident. I was doing lots of different artwork, different drawings and illustrations supported by writing every day, right up until November of last year, I think it was, that I did the first Benny and Dad comic strip. And it wasn't even meant to be the beginning of anything. It was going to be one thing that I did on one day, and the next day I was going to do something new. Last year was really a time where I was trying to find my legs again, because I took quite a long break from Instagram, I think close to 3 years, and came back and had to kind of just like figure out who I was as an artist. What's my voice? Where am I now in my life? What's important to me? I want these things to be honest and to reflect that. And I happened upon these two characters, and I just went, this is me. I'm sticking with it.
Well, that brings up a question that Carol asks. And when you just said, I found these two characters, is Dad you? You know, are these characters, and where do they diverge?
Yes. So Benny is a little Bichon Frise that my fiance introduced me to. I like to point out that I wasn't a dog person until I met her. And now you can't tear me away. Yeah, Benny and I have developed quite the friendship. And the strip is autobiographical in a sense. I mean, I have my brother and I have this joke between us that there are three kinds of true stories when it comes to like media or movies, especially. You have a true story where they do the best they can to represent the facts and give it to you in a tidy package. And then you have based on a true story, which is like, we're doing a pretty good job of telling you what really happened, but we might merge some people and create one character out of them, maybe fictionalize a few events. And then lastly, you have what I kind of do now, which is inspired by a true story. So you have a seed that's real, and then you just go in all kinds of crazy places with it.
Does that project buffer you mentioned allow you to maximize the impact of your work? Asks Project Rebuild.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, because having a bit of a cushion allows me to spend, if I need to, more than one day on a strip and create exactly what I want to do. Also, I get the luxury now of being able to write, put that away for a minute, come back to it, look at an idea and go like, you know what? I'm going to edit this. I'm going to change this line, or I'm just going to cut this all together. If I'm pumping those out every day and making them every day, I don't have the time to do that. But having a cushion allows me to actually make edits, which I think is super important. I think that improves my stuff, I hope.
Other thought I have, I went to a really weird place, strip comics, like a Bill Watterson or whatever, you know, Family Circus, all those sorts of things. Absolutely, Carrie. They kind of play on the fact, and there's been comics made joking about this, that, you know, like the Peanuts kids are like 80 years old now. is your choice that you're going to age Dad and age Benny? Is there going to be that awful strip that I don't want to read, and I got teary thinking about when I was going to ask you the question? Are you going to cover that?
So just get another one and name it the same thing, and the strip will go.
Benny two,
and it'll be a different kind of dog. I just won't even acknowledge it, though.
Like a German Shepherd.
Yeah.
but is that how that's going to work, or like, what are you thinking,
dude? Oh, Chris, man, this is a question I'm asking myself. My fiance Savannah and I, we were talking about it recently too, and I'm not even sure right now. You know, she and I would like to have kids one day, and am I going to introduce that into the strip? Because she's in the strip too. And so I'm asking myself, so when it's baby time, is there going to be a baby in the strip? And I don't know. I think I can tell you right now that I am definitely leaning towards freeze framing where they are right now. I like where they are right now. I feel like there's room here to tell a lot of stories without really sacrificing anything. It's kind of open-ended. We'll have to see, but I'm feeling like it's probably going to be right about here.
I mean, what if you grow up like Big Prince hair or something like that? You don't want that to be in the trip.
I was more thinking, my first podcast was about pregnancy and having little kids. And when they started to get older, I was like, I felt weird telling their stories like that. So we just stopped doing it. I didn't want to give away anything that they'd be embarrassed about as adolescents when everything is painful.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So Carol says you already have your last comic drawn out. I guess that's a closely guarded secret.
Wow. Carol, you're really paying attention. I appreciate that a lot, to create something and put it out there and for someone to be that aware of what's going on. I just thank you for that. The same day that I wrote and drew the first one, I immediately saw where the last one was going to be. And I wrote and drew that one too. I will probably redraw it because the characters visually have changed a bit. But without a doubt, I know exactly where these little guys land on the very last time we ever see them. And it is a closely guarded secret. Yeah, definitely. I won't reveal it till it drops.
Well, I'm going to pull a mermaid back out of the sea.
Yay! And,
bring this together. Nathaniel, you know, as an artist, were you thinking of all the possibilities of how you could draw Una and her pals?
How can you not? How can you not? And also, I just wanted to say to Una, what I find super inspiring about what you do is exactly what's possible at this time in history right now. I love it that you can have an idea like that in your head and say, I would like to be a mermaid. And that is not a crazy far-fetched thing that there's no way that's ever going to work. That is a workable thing. You, like you said, you found your pod, which I thought was an amazing way to say that you found your group of people. There's a whole world surrounding it. And then everything you're doing with it is spectacular. So I just wanted to, kudos to you.
Thank you very much.
Indeed.
So when we went backstage with you, Una, people were like, wait, do I need a pool if I want a mermaid? Hang on, what about, how's the makeup go? Like, are you using waterproof makeup? We have more questions.
Sure.
So, do you need a pool? And if so, what size? And do you wear waterproof makeup?
Okay. So as far as the swimming piece, a lot of mers don't have their own pools. They swim in natural bodies of water. So we have mermaids that are landlocked in the U.S., right? So they might swim in a pool, they might swim in a lake or river, they might go to the beach if they're not landlocked. It's really up to you. And we also do what's called dry land gigs. There are mers that raid in the city fountains, right? Anywhere where there's water. So it's really up to you. I started out, so if you were to ask me several years ago if I would be a traveling mermaid with my own tank, I would have laughed at you and said that was a dream. That was a fantasy. I started out in a tiny little blow up pool. And I mean like a little kiddie pool. And I went to a festival and I decorated it, you know, and it was just me and my kiddo at the time who was pretty little. It was our first time doing it. And it took off from there, you know, and I enjoyed the work so much. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it big. I don't know how yet. I was given some, I had graduated, I think, my 4-year college at the time, and I was given a financial gift for that. And I decided to invest and I bought a pool, one of the frame pools, right? And I think it was, I don't remember how many hundreds of gallons, it was large. And I traveled with that and I still travel with pools. So I have pools that I travel with, I have a tank that I travel with. Usually when I bring pools, I'm traveling with a group, my pod, because we go together as a group and perform. So it's really up to you and how you want to start. A lot of mers start in a public swimming pool, but you can acquire your own. It's really up to you. And then as far as aesthetic and makeup, it's been a long journey to figure out what works well underwater. But yes, I wear waterproof makeup. I actually, although I have some glitter, like biosafe glitter now, I don't wear glitter when I perform or swim. Glitter is like the worst thing you want to have in the water, especially in a confined tank, because the glitter will float in the water and actually go in your eyes and you can actually have problems with that. So And a lot of not every mer wears makeup or dresses up. There are mer folk all over that have all different kinds of aesthetics, and people usually develop what we call their mersana, which is your character development. And you have a backstory, you have a name. There's a lot that kind of goes into character development. And then, you know, your look is just really dependent on that. And so for me, I do like makeup. I do like some of the fancier aesthetic choices. And so that's the route that I go. But I'm always learning and sharing my mermaid secrets with other folks about what works well underwater. So but that's a bit of a challenge for sure.
Nathaniel, what books do you recommend for young children to evolve their drawing?
Well, that's a tough one for me because it really, there's so many places you could go with that. I think the first thing would be to take a look at what the child's interest is. If they're leaning in a particular direction, like cartoons or not. But I will go in general, I'll say this. One book that still sticks out in my mind that my dad got for me when I was a little kid was a book on cartooning by an artist named Preston Blair. I still use it. I don't have the same copy, but I still use it. I can't remember the title of it right now, but what's wonderful about it is it really breaks down cartoons and helps you see how to draw things with expression. And it's done in a way that is really sophisticated if you've been drawing for years and years and years, and there's a ton of value for you there, but super inspiring if you're just learning how to draw. It sets this high bar where you go, wow, things could look like that, but then breaks them down in a way that even as a little kid, you can start to understand how to work your way toward that. Oh, that's it. Yeah, you found it. Amazing. Yeah.
That's what I do.
Yeah, fantastic.
He's a fast Googler. That's what I feel like the alchemy is here, is that both of you are doing something that other people are like, wow, that's so cool. How come you get to do that? You could do it too.
Yep. Like
somebody out there is doing the thing you want to do. Just go do it.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a couple more last little pieces of the show we have to do before we wish you well and thank you for being part of it. So here's one.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
I mean, this is a hard one. There's a lot of people, a lot of good questions, but I'm going to give it to Lucy, Raul's wife and a wonderful mother as well. So makeup questions and whatnot. I was going to also think of giving it to Kira, but you know, she'll have to come back and earn it another whole time. So that means you're entitled to one free apple. You just have to go to the store, buy the apple, clean it up, eat it. You'll have a good time.
Wash it really extra good.
Wash it really well. Okay. And then the last question is, what goes in your waterproof mer backpack? It could be something physical. It could be something metaphorical. It could be something like an avocado, or it could be something like kindness. Carrie, what's another good one? What's something else we should pick up?
Physical or metaphorical? Metaphorical, my favorite, is probably always going to be fearlessness and vulnerability from Dave Landau, the comedian. Physical, it's a extra set of teeth.
An extra awesome. Set of teeth, said DJ Cummerbund. So I think we will start with mermaids first. I think that's probably the right way to get this done. Una, what should we include in the backpack for you?
Great. Well, physically, I'll start with that because that's an easy one for me, but my tail, because it takes me where I want to go. And then metaphorical, it would be perseverance because sometimes things don't come easy, and my journey to get where I am was hard. So you have to have that perseverance to keep going.
Nathaniel, what do you throw in the backpack?
So in my backpack for success, I just want to give you what is for me my personal definition of success first, because that my answers are tailored to that. For me, success is to live an authentic and fulfilling life of my own choosing. And for me, to have an authentic and fulfilling life of my own choosing, the two things that I need most are awareness and willingness.
I'm into
it. You need to draw that. So awareness to what specific purpose, and willingness to do what kinds of things?
Okay. So awareness in terms of, first of all, what is my definition of success? What does success mean to me? And by having one, I can go, okay, so that is what success means to me. So now next is willingness. I have to be willing to do the things that create that in my life. That definition is something that I wrote for myself. I think it was like May 12th, 2017. I remember it was like a really big deal. I still have it. And subsequently went totally off the rails and did not do anything about it. And I know what it's like to have an awareness of something important to you, but not the willingness to follow through on it. It's a dark place that I don't want to go back to. And so I think when those two things merge, you can create exactly what you intend to.
I love it. Well, I was trying to think of what I wanted to tell you about my grandmother today. And I have a real story. Like, this isn't a fake story, that it matches both things. So a lot of Nathaniel's art, the old art before the Betty and Dad arc, was a lot about sort of beauty and beauty acceptance, just sort of finding the beauty in people with different shapes, sizes, and looks and feels. And my Grammy was a Virgo. She was born on September 23rd. And so she had a mermaid statue-ish kind of a thing. It was like she used to keep pens in it in the bathroom in our house, her house in Maine.
How you gotta and keep pens this... in your bathroom?
Who knows? I don't know.
You write notes on the toilet paper?
No! Bathrooms are the only place in the house you can hide from people and do your thing. So pens were there. There was like everything. So I could maybe didn't even have pens. What do I know? I was a kid. But it was a mermaid, and it was a big chubby mermaid that said Virgo. And the other thing that I always remembered about it was like it was cartoonish art of like boobies. So as a little kid, I'm in there like, oh my God, it's boobies in my grandmother's house.